Welcome back to the Cinema Dirtbags. This is Rick Teat here with two of the best friends that anybody could ask for.
Aw.
Scott Decker.
Stephen King. Huh?
So today what we have for you, we kind of went over a couple ideas about what we wanted to talk about this week, but we decided to keep those in the pocket for now. So we're going to float around kind of a questionnaire, little bit different topics, this or that, so on and so forth. We're going to do about 10 of them for you. But before we do that, guys, what did you catch this week?
I can kick it off. So last week we had a little overrated, underrated conversation, and one of my picks was a little bit controversial across the board, I think. There's a lot of people who love the character, and I just, it's kind of leading into what I watched and why I watched it.
My wife.
So the Borat subsequent movie film was, and at the time, I believe, nominated for a couple Golden Globes, and my concern was it was a little bit overrated, so I just kind of went back and watched something that I had caught earlier last year. Have you guys seen The King of Staten Island?
No. I have not caught it. I need to.
So it's Judd Apatow, so right out of the gate, you know, it's it's his track record. You can kind of say which one. He's kind of a divisive guy. I mean, some people think he's kind of a goofball. It's not really that... not that funny, but this movie was a little bit different than the stuff I've seen. I'm a little bit more of a sucker for your darker, cynical comedies, and there was a lot of that in this. There was plenty of laugh-out-loud moments. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I had a great time with it, and Pete Davidson really surprised me. Not really. Before this movie, I remember I didn't dislike Pete, but I'd only seen him on SNL, really. I don't know. I didn't know how it was going to stack up. And the fact that it was coming from such a personal place for him, his father was a firefighter who passed away, I believe on 9/11. And it's just a really, really personal look at how he's used comedy to kind of try to heal and how it's hard to heal. And outside of just laughing a whole lot, it's a really touching picture. And to not get any nods at all, and we know we've talked off the mic about the Globes and their kind of the weight they carry, but still, this is a movie that deserves a lot more credit than I think it's gotten, and I didn't even think about it a couple weeks ago, or last week, but I'm glad I gave it another watch, because I enjoyed it just as much this time around, if not more. Bill Burr, playing a supporting role in this movie, he's in a lot of it.
I didn't know he was in that.
And he's Bill, you know, and he's almost playing himself, but it's really a movie that came from a personal place that, you know, if you're talking about comedies and like with those Globes, man, they only have like the drama category and then a musical comedy blended category. And for it to not even get a nod, nobody from that movie got a nod in any of the, you know, the actor, actress categories or anything. And I don't know, I just thought that was one that I needed to revisit it after thinking about the movies that were up and what I had seen this past year. That's, that one, I believe, what was it on,
Prime, maybe?
I want to say it was HBO.
HBO?
Yeah, I think I watched it on HBO. But, very good.
You can't nominate all the funny movies because you got to add a musical or two in there, too, to appease the rules of the Golden Globes.
Sure, yeah. And I can't even name
a musical that came out last year.
Hamilton was up.
That's a movie?
Yeah.
Had a movie?
It was called Music. See, it had a musical that came out, and then The Prom.
Yeah, these are all going by me.
Uh-huh. So I hadn't seen it. But it was it was shocking that you didn't have I guess you had that Palm Springs. I haven't seen that yet with
Andy Samberg. I want to see that. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
The Gopher movie Redux.
The what?
Groundhog Day.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All back, Steven.
Right. The
Gopher Day.
Gopher Day. Yeah, man, it's definitely worth the watch. I mean, like I said, it's a lot of laughs and a lot of very, very solid performance from Pete Davidson. And a really, you know, it's to see how he's coped. It was just very, very personal. And tell you what, man, at the end of that movie, there's a couple emotional moments where you really see him let it kind of shine through a little bit more personal than what you would see in any other place I've ever seen him do any sort of comedy. So... yeah, I just wanted to touch on that because if you're looking for a movie that should have been nominated for an award,
I need to check that one out.
King of Staten Island.
Yeah, me too. Pete Davidson has always bothered me.
And oh, yeah?
I don't know why. I just, like, the only thing I've seen him in is SNL, but
He kind of comes with that, like, don't give a shit kind of approach. And on screen, he kind of carries his type of comedy, the way he would deliver maybe on stage into that character. But he almost kind of has to make it personal. I thought it made it work more for me because, you know, I kind of get where that might not land for everybody because he's kind of just like, meh, yeah, eh. When he gives his jokes, it's not a whole lot of inflection or anything like that. But
yeah.
I really loved it. And the fact that he was behind the pen for a lot of it too just made it a lot more, it felt a lot heavier to me.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole time you're laughing too. So I mean, best of both worlds.
Well, he's going to be in Suicide Squad next. Pete Davidson's an actor now.
Who's taking off?
Who would have known?
Who is he playing in Suicide Squad?
I don't know. There's so many characters. I don't know. Slimeball. I couldn't tell you. Like, I don't know who any of these new
Harley
people.
Harley Quinn.
Yeah, Harley Quinn. All right.
That's what I got for this week.
All right. I got a couple, but I'll run through them real quick. Dog Soldiers. I finally watched my Scream Factory Blu-ray. Pretty much a whole bunch of like British army cats are out for like a routine exercise, and
they boom. Said they were dogs.
I'm getting there. They get attacked by giant dogs, werewolves. Oh. It's werewolves versus army guys, and I liked it quite a bit, but it's Neil Marshall right before he did the Descent, and I don't know if they just didn't have the money, but there's so many quick cuts away from the werewolves. It was kind of like missed opportunity. Like when you see them, they're like, whoa, they're gruesome and they're dope, but like you don't see them as much as you want to for a movie that's nonstop action and guns and violence. And
so how ganked up do you think he was when he finally got to show off some monsters in the Descent, right? Like, yeah.
So Dog Soldiers, not bad, not great, but fun, solid watch. Mars Attacks, saw that at a Screenland Armor. I'd not seen that since you know, I was itty bitty, and did it hold up? Probably not. Was it a lot of fun? Yeah, kept laughing because I was the only person in the theater like guffawing. Like every time the aliens would go, ack, 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 ack. How can you not see that they're like very angry with you? I don't care, like the translation aside, if they're screaming, ack, 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 it's not gonna bode well. But no, it's fun. Tim Burton's best by no means, but real fun. And then last night, for some reason, me and the girlfriend decided we're going to watch a creepy movie. So I literally picked GP's Creepies.
Oh, very nice. Great pick.
We watched 1 and 2, which, you know, they're fun. I can absolutely see why they have their cult status as they do now. Super fun. Just, man, 3. I don't own it. But I was like, you know what? I'm gonna keep this going. I'm gonna see what 3 is all about because it was just getting ripped apart in the reviews. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna give it a shot. Paid $3 to rent it on Amazon, I think. I want my $3 back. I'm halfway through this piece of crap.
Is that bad?
It's bad.
Worse than the second? I mean, the second was fine.
Second's fun. But no, this one's garbage. Like, the truck has a mind of its own. And it's like shooting harpoons and stuff.
The beating you truck?
Oh, damn it.
It's out of control, and you got like a slog of like has-been actors like kind of just like groaning their way through it, like, and now there's all this backstory. It's bad. And here's the thing: what I didn't realize until like 15 minutes of the movie, I was like, "What's going on here?" It's in between 1 and 2, so there's the ending of 2 is the ending. Spoiler alert for Jeepies Creepies. But yeah, it's like 1, and then in between 2 is 3. It's stupid. No.
Did you see that they're, I guess, gearing up for another round of those
Jeepers Creepers? That's the whole reason why I kind of thought to do this.
Right on.
Without the obviously problematic director at this point.
True.
He's not going to be doing that. But probably for the better because he went off the fucking rails.
Well, that'll be an interesting. I don't know if it's a reimagining or.
It just said reborn. So, and I don't know. I hope to get a little more information on the cat. Like, he's just flying around, eating people's eyeballs, and we don't really know why.
Yeah. Would the first one come out when we were in, what, middle school?
'01.
Yeah. I really, really dug that.
Yeah, the first
especially
one.
The first one.
That drain pipe, when you're 11 years old, especially, that is horrifying, man. Rough. Going down there, man. Ugh.
I was looking at, because Jonathan Breck, I think, is the guy's name who plays the creeper. And like you figure he's probably like a stuntman or something like that. Usually those kind of characters are played by stuntmen. And like you look at him and like he's got the creeper face. But he's not in much else. He's in like bit parts here and there. But he kind of looks like a Swedish like actual creeper.
Batman.
Yeah.
whatever you would call him.
Yeah. But I wanted to see like a sequel to 2. I wanted to see like Ray Wise 23 years later with the harpoon gun and the thing wakes up. That's a missed opportunity. Why are you filling in holes where they didn't need to
It's
be
all wanted? About that bat creature, man.
Yeah.
He's great. You talk about, like, a lot of times those movies fall flat, but they actually built a very cool franchise around that character.
And then
creepy shit music hits, man.
Yeah.
Jeepers, creepers.
Well, I don't know, I guess no spoilers about what the shot is, but that final shot of the first film is...
I didn't really understand the math behind that, because he just needed homeboy's eyes. Seems like he just cut him in half. Because he just came up straight behind
him. So, there's spoilers on that.
Oh, well. Who hasn't wanted to like, kill that's Justin true. Long before?
2011, there's been enough years gone by now, so... It's great. It's great. Good to watch.
20 years, as a matter of fact.
20 years.
That's crazy. But yeah, that's why I'm going to finish it when I get home. I had to stop it to come over here, but I'm not going to enjoy it. I'm only doing it because I have an obsessive mentality and I need to finish the movie. I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to enjoy it one bit. I'm telling you.
You already
right
got
now.
One foot in the pond at that point. So I watched a film a couple days ago. My buddy Devin Taylor sent me home with a couple films, and I've been itching to kind of watch this movie for a while now, but I finally got into it. Tombstone.
Hell yes.
Yeah. I loved every bit of this movie, and I'm not, like, it takes me a bit to, I just can't enjoy older films as much as most people, I guess. I don't know.
The movie was made like 94, Rick.
Right, but, you know.
At this point now, we're getting old. It's like, those 94.
That was
almost 30 years ago, right?
26, 27 years
ago. Oh, my God. All right.
Anyway. Godspeed. It's got a great cast. Kurt Russell, Bill Paxton, Sam Elliott. So it's about Wyatt Earp and his brothers, and they come into Tombstone. You know, they're fresh off their gunslinger ways, and they want to settle down and start a business. So they get a casino, right? So, yeah, they run that casino, and they start getting flack, start seeing trouble from the gang, the local gang that's in town, the cowboy gang. And you know who they are because every member notoriously wears a red sash anyways. I'm not going to spoil it, even though it's a 30-year-old movie. But, yeah, they're kind of on a collision course there, and they get the help of already one of my top 10 favorite characters in cinema history. I loved Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday. I was trying to think of who he reminded me of, and the more I sat on it, he was like a Western Jack Sparrow almost. He was constantly drunk. The whole movie, I'm like, why is this guy sweating so much? And, you know, about halfway through, they tell you why. But he's just got that, like, bravado, that charisma. He had every favorite scene, like, my favorite scene, everyone was his. You get the... I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Killer.
Great scene. My favorite scene in the movie, and I forget exactly how it goes, but of course he's hammered in the casino. He's been boozing, and he's getting ready to get into a gunfight with somebody, and they're like, yeah, you can't even stand up straight. You're seeing double, and he pulls out two guns, and he's, I got two guns, one for both of you. he was incredible. I love that. But Scott.
I 100% love that movie. It's one of my favorite Westerns of all time.
Yeah.
And I used to really, really get into some Westerns. 100% on Doc Holliday. The him flipping his teacup, I do that to this day. 30 years later, I'm still flipping that teacup just to look cool. Nobody gets it, but it's super dope. I know you're not the biggest Kurt Russell fan, but Kurt actually puts in a performance,
too. He was pretty good in that.
Sam Elliott. I will say one thing. It's a weird little side note.
Sam Elliott, who's been 70 for the last 40 years.
And pulls it off.
Oh, fantastic.
My mom, who watches, you know, all the gruesome shit that I do, one thing that's actually bothered her in a movie was when Bill Paxton gets shot and they're performing that surgery on him. She said it was just...
Spoilers anymore.
Well, I mean, who's to say he lives or not?
This is true.
But they're performing, he does get blasted. You know, and it seems so real how they're doing it, and it just goes on for so long, and it's so loud and violent. She said that gets her every time. like, of all the gruesome shit, you know, growing up watching monster movies, she's like, you know, a guy getting gut shot and them trying to take it out with a tweezer. That was what really got her on edge.
There's something about that kind of stuff. Yeah, that I'm kind of with her on that. When some of the most effective stuff isn't always just like a lopped off arm. It's like that delicate kind of stuff, like trying to surgically. Can you imagine? That's where needles get me, man.
Yeah.
It's the same type of thing.
You put yourself in that situation, I don't want to have somebody digging a slug halfway through my back.
Right.
So.
And obviously the conclusion, the OK Corral, you know, the famous, you know, gunfight. The whole thing's done really well. I love that movie. Everything about it.
No, it's great. I'm going to start watching. Like, I was never big into Westerns, but this movie has probably opened up a whole bunch of new doors for me. But, yeah, that Doc Holliday. And Johnny Ringo. It's like somebody just walked over your grave.
We talked about this before. Like, I don't know. I had this conversation with somebody not too long ago about, like, the romantic drunk. And that's always been, like, what we were talking about. How, like, Colin Farrell in True Detective Season 2, Rick in Casablanca.
Colin Farrell in a lot of stuff.
Right. But, like, the romantic drunk, the functioning alcoholic, like me, myself, I don't drink all that much anymore, right? But, like, if you, like, the functioning alcoholic is such a character, if you can get it down. There's layers to it. It's not just the guy who's pissing his pants on the, you know, his lazy boy. If you can go out there and do gunfights and you can't even stand up, there's something more to it. I can't really put my finger on it.
I think it has to do with demons, man. I really do. I think it's like kind of on the surface, but there's like, I don't know, generally speaking, those characters have a lot they're dealing with outside of just the booze. And I think that whatever they tend to do in the movie is always sort of like amplified by the fact that you can tell there's this whole other fight going on, something else they're having to kind of sedate. So,
Yeah,
I hear you on that.
A lot of iconic lines in it.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my pop's favorites, and so this is kind of a soft spot for me, too, because he loves this movie, and every time we talk about favorite movies, it just comes up.
Yeah, they just, like, these are lines that I've heard my whole life, but I never knew what it was from. Like, there's that meme going around of Curly Bill Brocious, and, well, bye. I never knew what that was from. But I, as soon as the movie starts, you know, it's got him in. And I'm like, that guy, I know that guy from somewhere. I know him from somewhere. But, yeah, I mean, you have that. It's, you have, you're just going to stand there and bleed.
Right.
And the cast is crazy, too. Like, I didn't realize how.
Everybody's in that.
Right. I mean, this is, like I said, 30 years later. So, of course, some of these guys were probably relative unknowns. But, like, Michael Rooker, I was like, okay, Michael Rooker.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, who's Johnny Ringo? Johnny Ringo looks familiar. And he's not a big name now.
Oh.
Michael Biehn.
Yeah, Michael Biehn's always been, I mean, he's great.
Yeah, like that's John Connor.
Yeah.
Or not John Connor. Yeah. Kyle Reese.
Yeah.
Anyways, big cast. Shout out to Devin Taylor. Fantastic suggestion. I loved it. I can't wait to watch it again. Tombstone.
Well, I'm glad you're kind of diving into this world a little bit. Circle back, maybe get you that big gun down. I talked about 25 minutes straight one day.
That was the thing. Or right after Unforgiven came out and changed the Western again, because we hadn't had, like, Westerns were American cinema for so long. And then, you know, they went the way of the bison and just disappeared for a long time. Well, Unforgiven came back out and they changed everything again. Well, then they progressively, they're like, oh shit, people still like, you know, gun down stuff. So there are a handful of them after this, like this one. Then they had Wyatt Earp back to back with this. It was two Wyatt Earp movies, you know, back to back. And they had a few other ones and then it died off again. But I was just hoping we'd get some more like this.
Yeah.
Because this is, to me, almost a perfect Western. It's great. Good on you.
Hard Greg. To beat. Good watch.
Hard to beat. So this being our 10th episode, in honor of that, we are going to give you guys, in a roundabout way, 10 questions. We each have a few each, and we'll just roll from there. Steven, you want to kick us off?
Yes, I will kick us off. It's pretty exciting news here. We're doing the old double digits now, guys. It's gone fast.
Yeah. It has gone fast.
You know, but okay, I want to borrow a little bit from the style that Rick brought a few weeks ago when he gave the lightning round after forgetting Sarah Marshall, and I'm going to do a love or hate. This is one that hit me today, and I thought this is kind of a topic that I think a lot of people have an opinion on. So, love or hate, you guys, post-credits scenes. How do you feel about them?
Well, if we have to do love or hate, I'd say love, because I always stick around for the credits, and I get a little bit, you know, a little bit extra. I hate that they've become a thing. So I love them if they're done right. Like, you know, you're going to get one for a Marvel movie and this and that. But and every now and again with a horror flick. But I hate that it's just become like commonplace that, you know, and then people get pissed off in the theater. Like, I always sit around because, you know, everybody whose name's up there helped with the movie some way, shape or form. Right.
Right.
But when they didn't put a scene. Why? That pisses me off. Oh, so 100%. I love the credit scene and I hate people.
Fair enough.
I mean, I personally love it. I'm a sucker for more content. It always blows my mind. It never fails. Every time I'm in a superhero movie, specifically Marvel, because DC doesn't really do it. Every Marvel movie I'm in, I see half the crowd leaving.
Right.
When the credits start rolling.
Noobs.
You guys have been here for this. You know what the drill is at this point. I think it's a way to shoehorn in a little bit more story without... I don't know. Like, it would be weird for these scenes to be cut right at the end before the real credits roll.
So, for sure.
Yeah. I like them. I love them.
I think there's something to that. I feel like they're almost like teeny tiny little miniature trailers. You know, they're not necessary to the end of the story, generally speaking. They just set up the next story.
Correct.
And I'm with you in a lot of that, in a lot of ways. I like them if they're at the end of the credits. I have a little bit of a problem with, like,
you don't need five of them.
I don't dig that. When you're going to, because I'd sit, I don't know, I sit for the credits, you know, for the credits. If you tuck that in at the end of the thing, or at the end of the credit roll, then people have, stayed. And I guess it's part of it encourages people to stay, which I always do like people getting their dues. There's a lot of work that goes into these movies, to your point. But I just don't like when you get past, like, they go to the top build cast, and then they hit you with a scene, and then everybody pours out. And it's kind of like even worse than, pouring out at the beginning. Because it's like, well, these guys worked hard too. I don't know. I feel like maybe it's a little treat for some people who stay. But I just don't like the ones that pop in the middle.
Okay. That's fair enough.
So, Rick, you gave me the idea for my first question because you said you watched The Lighthouse the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So, Steven and I already talked, like, maybe later on down the road we can do an episode on this. So this is just a bare bones. What do you think up front? Robert Eggers or Ari Aster? So Eggers is the guy who did The Witch and The Lighthouse, and Ari Aster did Hereditary and Midsommar. I don't know how much of that you can speak on, but I know, Steven, I'm going to put the screws to you. What do you think? We'll come back to Rick because he looks a little perplexed.
I've seen one of those.
It is a tough one, man. I know we talked before, and I'll skip the... All the frills here, and just I'm gonna go with Eggers, and it's very close. But I love period pieces. Like, I like The Witch. It's tough to pull that off, and it's tough enough to scare somebody. But he delivered so well with that movie, and the styles on both those guys. It's just they're so unique, and I'm really looking forward. I feel like it comes down to how you kind of like your poison. Both of those directors are sort of cutting edge at the front of horror, and Midsommar, it's very difficult, but my preference, I think out of all four of those movies, I'd have to say The Witch is probably my favorite personally. With my taste, I think that one's, I go back to that one the most. I think it's just a creepy, eerie, and I've always been fascinated with that point in time when, everything was on, all the trials and stuff, and I think they nailed it better than pretty much any period piece witch movie I've seen. And so neck and neck race, Robert Eggers for me.
I mean, I feel like I'm going Eggers by default here because I've only seen The Lighthouse out of those four. But
we got to change that, obviously, because we had to do this episode. I feel like it'd be pretty fun.
No, we will.
Oh, for sure.
I told you guys this a couple days ago. I really, I was confused by The Lighthouse, but I thought it was shot very, very cool. It was very, I don't know what to compare it to. It was just real, old-timey and, grimy.
There's really nothing you can compare it to, honestly.
Besides me being confused, I enjoyed it. It was very...
It's a disorienting kind of experience, yeah. As is. So, I can kind of see where that... But that's the idea, that isolation and the the losing of the mind.
You guys are very, very big on The Witch. You guys have been talking about that since it came out, so I need to check that one out.
Sure. obviously no wrong answer here. I'm only going, Aster because, Lighthouse is good, but of them, I think of the four, it's the weakest entry. And with, Hereditary and Midsommar both being near perfect films for me, That being said, I think that The Witch is probably my favorite too, which is really hard to say that Aster, he outperforms because he's got two perfect movies as opposed to one spectacular one and one that's pretty good. And that's the only, it just, it's math is the only reason that, you know, Ari wins it for me. But like you said, it is a neck and neck race, and I think it'd be interesting to dive into all four of those joints.
That'd be an exciting. That's a, I'm always excited to talk about scary movies, man. So that for sure would be an episode I'm looking forward to.
One more on The Witch, man. Going into that thing, I did not have expectations. You know, I was like, okay, period, witch movie. And at first it was like, oh, man, they're really going for it. They're doing the accents. They're doing the whole business.
Right.
But that was one of those just building tension movies that it just when I got out of my truck after seeing that movie, it was kind of hard for me to, like, step off because I had, like a running board on the side. I had kind of a steep drop from my Hummer. And I was like, is there going to be a witch under here? Like, I'm a grown man. And that movie actually scared me because of, I mean, oh, man, the isolation of it all and how 100%. It was shot and just some of the weird shit that happens. Like, there are very few actual scares in that two-hour movie.
All atmosphere for all the most
atmosphere.
Part.
And he just nailed it. But, like I said, if we had to go...
It's like if The Crucible hit you in the head with a sledgehammer.
Exactly.
Like, it's like it rings your bell. It's it lingers.
Anything that can make you feel like that is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So my questions are sort of like that, in the same nature. Everybody here has played FMK, and I'm not going to get into the...
we're getting okay, we made it 10 episodes, guys. I'm proud of us. This is going to be the last one, though.
I'm not going to get into the acronym here, but essentially, it's sort of like ranking 1, 2, 3. Now, being best to least best, being that this is a cinema podcast, I've thought of star role, supporting role, and an extra. I'm going to give you three, and you're going to tell me which ones are which.
All right.
So your three are Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci.
Son of a bitch. I mean...
It was star role, supporting role, and...
Extra.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm going to...
Go for it.
Yeah. I have a feeling I know who your extra is going to be, but I was more curious on who's going to take the lead.
Everybody's extra is going to be Joe Pesci. That's without a doubt. And, I mean, you've heard me say this on this podcast. The two greatest actors of all time are Bobby De Niro and Al Pacino.
Well, that's what I'm doing here.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So I'm let Steven go.
Oh, no, but you jumped in.
Yeah, I did.
Don't tell you.
Steve Bag Cinema.
I had to take the Robert Eggers, Ari Aster... on the chin. That was tough, too.
Oh, yeah?
But this one, I don't know. It's all you.
It's tough because, like I said, both those guys, the body of work is just spectacular. And if I had their filmographies pulled up, I think it'd be a little bit easier. But, I mean, when those guys started, everything they were doing, which is classic after classic after classic, and then they weren't for a while. And both of them had a resurgence. And right now, they're actually in that with The Irishman and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I mean, Joker. I mean, say what you will about that movie, but Bobby was really good in it. Ugh.
I got you on this one.
Yeah, you have. It's not an easy one, man. Like, I want to say, oh, man, this is going to be tough. I'm going to say De Niro's going to edge it out for me just because... the breadth of his work is a little bigger. Like, okay. Pacino can give you, like we talked about, The End Justice for All. It's one of these underrated, just courtroom dramas. He can do pretty much everything Pacino can, but I think that in the breadth of his career that De Niro has done more comedy, stuff that actually landed, like Midnight Run and stuff like that. He's done, you know, his Godfather stuff. He did, I mean, well, so did Pacino, obviously. But, like, he's done his gangster pictures. When you get them together and it actually worked with Heat, I mean, that works too. But I think that De Niro's going to take number one.
So Pacino, De Niro's going to be the star.
Yeah. Okay. Pacino co-star. And I mean, Pesci, that's not even a... You should have put somebody else in
there. I didn't know who else to put in that same era, and that was the one that I could...
I'm probably going to just echo his order. But, you know, one of the... This is kind of funny that you picked this, because I literally, I don't want to say no reason, because there's clearly a reason why I wanted to watch this again, but I don't know where it came from. This past week, I just was sitting around and go, you know what? I want to rewatch Cape Fear. I want to watch that movie again.
Oh, yeah.
That performance too, man. God. Yeah, I'm going to go De Niro, Pacino for the, De Niro as the lead, Pacino as a supporting actor, and Pesci as the extra.
One more thing out of this. So, two greatest actors of all time. Everybody's known it for decades, right? They're in Godfather 2 together, right? But it's a, you know, a time split thing. De Niro's playing the dad as he was younger, and Pacino is obviously playing Michael Corleone in a different time period. So, they're in that movie technically together, but they're not on screen together. So, was it 1995? It finally happens. You get Heat. You get the perfect cops and robbers movie to this day. Michael Mann's L.A. crime epic, perfect, right? And they only have a couple of minutes of screen time. They sit down, you know, they have the coffee and the diner and everything. It's electric, and they have to shoot out at the end, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, here it is. They're going to do another one. Was it 2008, something like that? Righteous they did Kill. That turd of a movie called Righteous Kill. Oh, man, that pisses me off so bad. Like, I want to rewatch it, but I really don't want to subject myself to being that angry again, man. But no, that's a super good question, man. You pissed me off, but that's a good question. Now I had to say that Al Pacino's second to anybody really hurts.
I know. Pesci's the extra.
Yeah. Sorry, Joe.
I love how high-strung he is. And I think that's why I'm going to switch Pacino to my star. Because I think he brings a little bit more...
He definitely brings...
Dunkachino.
And this is why he's number two. Because when he bombs spectacularly.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I'm going Pacino, my star, De Niro... He'll be my supporting, and Pesci's the extra.
So. What a good problem to have, right?
I really hope Joe Pesci's not listening to our podcast, because we just...
Hey, you motherfucker!
We gave him the short shrift, like, real bad. He was really good in the Lethal Weapon movies. I'll give him that. I love to hate him.
He's fun, man, but that's unfair. That's...
Pesci was the one in The Irishman, though, that surprised me, because... You know, you got the good. Two Titans, and then you're like, oh, wow, Joe Pesci, they brought him out of retirement for this, and he actually did,
he was great. Very tense. Like, I felt very tense every time.
He had that haunting screen. Quality that, yeah, you didn't quite, yeah. When you went in, it's like, what are we going to get?
Specifically at the end when, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, he was great in that, and that, like, that's why I don't want to give him no dues.
This
whatsoever.
Is no disrespect to you, Mr. Pesci.
No.
You know.
You did really good in The Irishman.
Home Alone.
My cousin.
I mean, you couldn't best a 10-year-old, but
right,
it is what it is. Steve,
I switch gears a little bit here and talk a little bit about something else that we're gonna show some love to here sometime in the next couple weeks, probably. To you guys, which matters more when it comes to physical media: presentation of the product or the special features?
That's not a fair question.
I knew that one would. Which one matters more to you?
All right.
To a film you have not seen, or does this matter?
Either or. I mean, what it comes down to, I guess, is like, would you rather, which one, I guess, pulls you in more? If you have a wonderful, beautiful presentation, steelbook, collection, whatever that might be, or the special features pull you in, documentaries, different cuts of films, things like that.
All right, I'm not going to answer that.
Oh, my, if you answered that.
Okay. No, but I'll give you a very long answer to something, because that's not fair.
I want to see what he had to say. I'm going to be disappointed.
You and I were talking off mic about a movie that we're going to get from Severin, right? There are no special features on that.
Right.
But it has a hell of a slipcover, right?
Well, I'm not saying, I mean, yeah, both are huge factors.
Right.
But if it came down to you, like, which one?
Blind by cover. But here's, this is why I'm saying I'm going to answer it, but I'm going to give you two reasons, right?
Okay.
So, Total Recall. They just brought out the remastered edition of Total Recall. Well, I already have it on Blu-ray in a baller edition, right? Well, special features wise, they have a documentary.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They have a documentary about Carolco Pictures, right? On the brand new one.
Cool.
So special features wise, I'm buying the same film again, same presentation, but because this has a documentary on it. So,
what would you say?
A blind buy, which I do quite often with, you know, companies like Severin or Vincent, it's completely presentation.
So what happens if you're faced with both copies of Total Recall, but only pick could only pick one?
Well, that's never going to happen.
Well, though. I'm just hypothetically. You're going to have
this
all 50.
Your question, bub. Just if you answer had
to
it.
Pick, if you had two copies of Total Recall, one gorgeous presentation, one that's kind of more your run-of-the-mill presentation, but you get all the docs, you get all this, the interviews.
I mean, the answer sounds simple.
It is. It's going to be the special features.
Okay. It's not as easy. I mean, I think a lot of people might think this is easier than what it sounds like.
I stick with my answer. The blind buy, I'm 100% going. Because on the blind buy, I don't really know these films. So right. I'm not really as interested in the special features. Total Recall, I've seen 47 times. So I want to know everything that goes into it, right?
Right.
So, like, I already have the Baller Pretty Edition with Quado's hand or whatever.
Right.
But I want the 4K that has one extra little bit of information. So if I'm going blind buy, it's got to be 100% slipcover, steel box, whatever, right?
Right.
But if I'm going to a known classic that I've delved into 100 times, I want everything there is to know about it. So
right.
I didn't 100% not answer your question. But
no, fair enough. That
makes a whole bunch of sense to me.
Thank you.
No, that's a good way to answer it. I have never been super big about special features. Like, I just want to see a blooper reel, and that's about it. But, you know, I like my movies kind of like how I like my beer. If it's got a great art, it draws me in. So
that's
sign me up for the art.
Sucker for the good marketing. Mm-hmm. I can appreciate that. I'd say, like, spoiler alert, both of these things matter to everybody that buys these things. It's not like one is disposable over the other, but... I thought this one might stick a little bit between the ribs. It did for me when I thought about it. It took me a minute, but I'm gonna go with the special features. Just, you know, for the reasons you said. I mean, both matter. But a long time ago, I remember hearing, I forget who I was listening to. It was a recommendation on how to learn about, you know, how to make movies, how to, you know, you can learn so much about films and the craft itself from just listening to people talk about it. And I've been fascinated with interviews and just documentaries on the making of and all this stuff ever since I could, you know, get my hands on a DVD with any sort of special features at all. And I was recently let down by some conversation on the internet about how there should be streaming services for special features. And this is just my opinion on it. I know there's a lot of people out there that don't want to collect discs, but there's a reason why it's a special feature. It's because you're getting something in addition to this. It's an investment. These guys work hard to put this stuff together. And let's be fair to these companies. A lot of times you don't have to pick. These guys are going out of their way to do high-quality presentation, outstanding special features, tons to learn about, yeah, movies that you might, even when you go blind by a movie now, a lot of these guys are crushing it with just, it's a labor of love. So I was put out a little bit to hear a lot of bigger names saying, hey, why don't we put some special features on a streaming service? And it's like, well, okay, you're going to snuff out
another avenue for people that go out and buy physical copies. That's just one step closer to.
Yeah, that's actually the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. So I hate that.
It's frustrating, you know. We'll have more talk about, you know, the importance of this kind of stuff, why we champion it so much later on. But I thought that was a little bit different question, kind of a little prelude to an episode would be coming up here soon.
That was that's an in-depth question right there. I like that one.
I hate you. Mine's easier.
Scott's not going to answer anything
tonight. No, I'm not going to answer. You said you liked my answer. Mine's easier. I mean, mine should just, it should be over like that. You should answer it and move on. All right.
Okay.
If you had to keep only one of the filmographies of one of these guys, the whole thing, only one stays, Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger. Every single film, you only get one of them.
Stallone for me.
That's not the answer we're looking for.
The Rocky films are some of my favorite films ever. Arnold's got some bangers, of course. I mean, of course he does. But give me Stallone.
Okay.
Don't have anything more to say to that?
Nope, just Rocky.
I feel like
apology or anything.
No, Arnold's fine. Like, he's just like... Like, if we did that, he would obviously be the extra. He wouldn't be the star. He wouldn't be the support. He would be the extra in the back. Arnold's fine. Nothing he's ever done has been as good as Rocky, let's be honest. I mean, Jingle All the Way. Stallone. The Expendables, which I know Arnold was in two of them.
Three of them?
Three of them.
So everyone.
Just briefly in the first one. But yeah, he was...
All right.
Okay.
I hate you, and I would really like to hear what Steven has to say. Maybe bring a little bit of common sense into this conversation.
Yes, I will cushion.
Why did you ask the question if you didn't
want to
hear the answer?
I'll cushion the blow here by saying it's not to write this man off because he, you know, to your point, there's a lot of great movies that if Sly wasn't around, I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that we'd sorely miss. But for me, it's going to be Arnie. He's, and I guess, you know, for my money, I think he, I don't know, I'm not going to delve too deep because I could talk about this for a long time, but I think his filmography, I enjoy it more. And I think,
you love Batman and Robin.
Well, Batman, yes. I mean, all Terminator, True Lies is great. Eraser's awesome. I love the, I mean, like all the action popcorn movies he does kind of just, I don't know, they play to me.
I mean, you can say the world's greatest action star and nobody's going to get, you know, frazzled over it. That's right. And, you know, I thought about this when I made this question for you because I knew you were going to say Rocky. I knew it. So I knew I was just going to have to take that one on the chin. And you're not wrong. I did this one to try to make it a little bit more complex, kind of like his physical media one. But that's super tough. Like Rambo, I mean, some of those.
Rambo's, yeah.
I mean, and some of his writing, actually, honestly, when you get down to it, I mean, multifaceted wise, obviously, like he's the man. Like he does a lot of his writing. And hell, he's a hell of a director. Some of those Rockies he made. But, you know, it just comes down to, I mean.
Who had more longevity? I really don't know the answer to this question. I feel like Stallone been.
No, they both came in around the same time. But if you look at it, like, I think that, like, Hercules in New York and stuff like that came out first. Like,
but just
early 70s when he did, like that, leading into Pumping Iron and stuff like that. Arnold was already kind of becoming a name, whereas like First Blood Part One, and what was he did some like straight up porn joint before everything else.
Yeah,
like,
he did
something Stallion. I don't know, but like the longevity is almost equal. They're almost the same. Like, and that's why. And I love the feud between them in the 80s, how they hated each other, and now they're like best friends. So like you can never get rid of one because they're both just spectacular human beings.
And I could see them you could literally draw that up as them as being pals. And I love how they still jab each other on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
I saw Sly posted something the other day. I think Arnold started it. I don't remember what he said, but Sly was like, talking about how, you know, about what Arnold, what have you written? Oh, wait, yeah, nothing. Basically just busting his chops compared to...
film-wise, but I mean, I have his autobiography.
Right. Totally. No. He was just talking about the... Arnold probably... Yeah, he started that whole thing, I think, because he was replying. But anyway, it's just really cool to see those guys jabbing at each other, still.
Yeah, still. They're best friends.
Love Arnold does have the coolest YouTube video out there of him talking about how his father introduced him to stogies.
Oh, dude.
The best one. Oh, yeah, it's
you being the interviewer that you are.
Poking there.
Digging deep all the time.
Oh, man, I love that one. Yeah.
I question. Don't think you could go wrong with either, but, I mean, you can.
All right, Rick.
So we're dialing back to my star supporting extra. You guys know I'm a comedy guy, and these guys aren't all... They're all about in the same time period. I'm going to give you three here. Seth Rogen, Paul Rudd, and Steve Carell.
And you've got same setup as before?
Yes.
So you said Seth Rogen.
Paul Rudd.
And Steve Carell.
Mm-hmm.
For me. Do you want to take this one first again?
No, I'm coming in with my heat at the end.
Okay, well, I'll try to keep it short and sweet. I think this, again, probably plays way more to taste than I think the last one did.
Yeah.
Right. So for me, it's going to have to be, I'm starring Paul Rudd all day. And I think I would co-star Carell and probably extra Rogan, just because I think that blend, I'm not quite sure how in the world I would land. Maybe you could get Rogan and Rudd on a wavelength, but I think you could do some fun stuff with those two guys, mm-hmm. Paul Rudd and Steve Carell, jiving off one another. But I like all of them well enough. Paul Rudd, though, is just, he's too funny. He's got that, we were talking about in Sarah Marshall, he was a very supporting role in that movie and still crushed it. Mm-hmm. He's a favorite character, I think, man. It just, yeah, he's going to get my star power.
Seth Rogen, reduced to an extra.
Well, I'm going to flip that on its head. I'm going to have Seth Rogen be the star. Ooh. And Paul Rudd, and this is no shade on Paul Rudd. I think to your point, though, I think that he is a better supporting actor. When they give him the reins of a full feature, I like him a little bit more. I think when he delivers his stuff, limited.
He's had not the right director yet. I got him.
I agree. I love Paul Rudd. But you know who I don't love? Steve Carell.
I knew this was coming.
Steve Carell can go ahead and not even be an extra. You can just have the movie with Rogan and Rudd and make $1 million. But Steve Carell is just overrated. I'm not really a fan of... I don't really think anything he's done.
I don't mind Carell.
How do you like that, Rambo?
I think in the right scene...
40-year-old virgin?
It was all right. But you know why? Because Paul Rudd and Seth Rogen were in it.
This is true.
I didn't do that. I just thought of that. I was like, yes!
But he was the star, to your point. I don't know. Yeah, I can see it's a lot of that comes down to just like, what do you dig in your comedy? Because they're very different approaches, all three of those guys.
I was going to say, I like jokes in my comedy.
Yeah, okay. Oh, I hadn't really thought about these for my own answer when I typed these up. Because... I think I'm with you there, where Paul Rudd is best suited for supporting stuff. I mean, I love Steve Carell in The Office. 40-year-old Virgin was okay. I guess I don't love his stuff in movies quite as much as I do in The Office, which is one of the greatest television shows of all time. You have poor taste if you don't like it. Seth Rogen, Pineapple Express, one of the funniest movies to me, but he's very hit or miss to me. I would probably star. I gotta lean with you. I think Carell and Rudd would do good. I would probably star Carell. Rudd would be my supporting, and I'd have to bench Rogen to the side, even though he could give you a lighthearted.
Yeah, and that's just it. Have to kind of build, like, if you're going to have him in there, like, it's just, and maybe he could surprise you if you put him in the right story, and he is funny, but I don't know.
I think he's kind of coming into his own. I think now that he's out of the more juvenile flicks that he started out with, like, even, what's the one with Charlize Theron where she's the president or whatever?
Oh, I just looked at this the other day.
That one's actually not bad. Like, as he's gotten older, I think that he's tuned back to, you know, all that stuff, and I think he's gotten substantially better. That's the only reason why I gave him one over Rudd.
He's the same guy in every movie, I feel like, but you could really say this about all three of them.
Yeah. That is a good one, though. I mean, I just knew my Carell hate was going to put him at the bottom, but I just think, he said, Rudd's a good, always kills it with his supporting, and I don't know.
In the couple feature ones I've seen with Paul Rudd, the Wanderlust and This Is 40, mm-hmm. They didn't do much for me outside of one specific scene.
Yeah.
Okay, Steve.
Okay, so this is the third question. So this one's a little bit it's a meatier question, but so I'll put you in a role here. Okay, you're producing a movie, and you're producing a movie that's being directed by this promising kind of first time director, and you have the great fortune of having access to hire one kind of all-star award-winning team member for your filmmaking crew here. So who would you pick out of these three to be your all-star Oscar award-winning team member? You got an editor, a cinematographer, and a leading actor. And the two that you don't pick are also first-timers as well. So which one?
That's a good question. Hit me with those again. You get actor, editor, cinematographer.
Right, and one of them is an Oscar award-winning maestro. And the other two, you know, maybe great, maybe not, but you know that this person is going to be like that. And you have a first-time director on your hands.
Man, I am the first?
You're the producer.
I'm the producer.
And you're hiring this person to work with your first-time director.
Okay.
And your other two people that you don't put in that role of the all-star are first-timers in the big game.
I got it.
You got it?
Go first? No, you can go first.
I'm going to take the actor, and here's why. It's going to draw more names in, I feel like, than the elite cinematographer or the editor. So you're going to get some views, which is in turn going to give my other people experience, might get their names out, and they can kind of get the ball rolling there. I think that would be – that's where I would go. Give me Leo DiCaprio for my film, and let's roll.
Okay.
I'm going to second that. I wish that I would have went first now, because now I sound like I'm just copying Rick. But he's 100% right. If you get one of these guys – like, I know I've mentioned Daniel Day-Lewis a handful of times in this. If you get that performance, I don't care if the guy's shaking the camera, you're still going to love it. And especially like we talked about Tombstone earlier and how the rumor was that Kurt Russell, because Cosmatos's like illness, pretty much directed that movie. If you have a guy who's been on so many sets, even behind the camera, in front of the camera, whatever, like he's going to know a lot more and he's going to be able to help these guys where the cinematographer and the editor are just going to be doing their own thing and maybe not helping everybody else out on the crew. Whereas if you have one of these cats like a De Niro, Pacino, who's been around a time or two or 70, they're going to be able to help everybody out in the entirety of the cast. And you hear that on like some of these new movies with these up and coming directors where like all they do is just applaud their star for helping them get the thing made, and 100% butts in seats.
That's a good point. And I think like, yeah, from, so when I was thinking about it, I suppose like, you know, for me, you as a producer, I suppose you really don't have like a direct investment necessarily in the growth of this director. But for me, like I'm going to take a turn from you guys. If I was to pick somebody to, you know, work with a first time director, and to see them succeed, I think I might go with the editor. Because there's a lot of confusion that can happen after the fact. To your points about the actor, all those are valid points, but it can also go the other direction really fast, especially with a very inexperienced director. And if you get lucky with an actor who cares about that growth of that cast and isn't just in there for the check, then you luck out and you have this thing on your hands. But if it backfires, you end up with like a situation in Tropic Thunder where the guy's running around and has no idea what he's doing and he's stepping on landmines figuratively and in real life. So I think that for me, and I guess that might just be to like the director's benefit. I think sitting down with the great director, I think QT sitting down with Sally helped him immensely. When you got somebody that knows what they're doing after all the chaos is over and you sit down and you really bring out what that final product is, because half the time you leave so much of that on the floor, that, yeah, I think that would be beneficial to building that director and maybe coming back stronger next time. As far as butts and seats go, though, your actor is definitely the way to go.
I mean, editor is probably the right answer because, I mean, if you think about it, they make the movie. I mean, I've always said, like, they're going to be in charge of the final thing. But for me, I've always thought that if you're making a film, the director and editor should be hand in hand. Like, maybe not the director overstepping his bounds, but it is his film or his or her film, right? And I don't know, the editor's not going to go off some wild, you know, left turn and make it a different movie. But
if they do have the experience and they can sway that director, you want, or if, I guess if the inverse of that, if your director doesn't have the experience to know that the editor is making a mistake, that's where you want to have that trust. And a lot of times it's kind of like a rock on the end of a kite. Like you've got somebody who wants to make this movie that, and that doesn't stop at, you know, when they wrap principle. Like at the end of the day, that editor comes in, I think a lot of times in the best movies, really anchors that project down and says, okay, you can do this, we should do this, and kind of provides like a clear vision, help the director kind of, I mean, come to his senses or her senses sometimes. My two cents, I don't know. If you want to make the money, though, it's hard to beat DiCaprio or Daniel Day-Lewis on, yeah, on your bill, man. But, yeah.
Making us think.
Damn. It was a very, very good question.
Now I feel thank bad because all mine are pretty simple.
Yeah, mine suck.
Dick.
No, dude, that DiCaprio De Niro question had us all in knots.
Yeah, true.
I hope the last one is as good, but well, Scott?
Well, I'm just going to light, you know, what's the sauce?
You gonna give us a meatball here?
Yeah, I'm going to meatball you one in pretty easy. Jason Bourne or James Bond? The two JBs.
Bond. He's just got that bravado. No matter mm-hmm. who's playing him, he's that smooth pimpin' papa that, oh, yeah. that Matt Damon just is not.
I used to bring this up to a coworker in my previous job, and she would always say, Jason Bourne across the board. I said, how do you say that?
That's a bold.
Do you have a tumor? Like, are you having a brain aneurysm right now? Like, just look at it, man. From what, 1962 to right now, James Bond has been James Bond.
Right.
Okay, we got four Bourne movies, three of which are good.
When they start remaking Jason Bourne movies every decade, then maybe we can entertain this. But I feel like
you just don't have the longevity. We're not going to be talking about Jay. I know, I love Matt Damon, and the first three, I actually like the third one the best. Those first three were actually spectacular. The chase sequence in four was off the rails. I loved it, but other than that, that movie was kind of a dud. But like, if you look at it, we got 25, getting ready to be 26 James Bond movies, and I love every one of them. I mean, two. Varying degrees. I love all of them, sure. But James Bond's the boy, man.
I'm going to have to third it. He's the epitome of class. You know, anytime you think about that guy that kind of steals the show, you know, subtly sometimes, but also just, I mean, that's the secret agent, man. How do you not go James Bond? And I mean, from the films themselves, of course, but just to the characters, I don't see how you don't go James Bond. I mean, that
if you put them both in the same room, nobody's flocking to Jason Bourne. You know where they're crowded around.
Yeah.
Daddy.
You're not wrong. And here, we're going to do like a 10-hour cast, and we're going to do every one of them ranked one of these days. We're going to get some vodka martinis, shaken, not stirred, and we're just going to sit down and go from one to, it'll be what? It'll be 26.
Can we be in spy tuxes?
We have to. That's okay. That's kind of the point. I want to sit around here in a tux and
I need to hit Men's Warehouse real quick.
Yeah.
Just holler at me. I need to get fitted.
Oh, I'm glad we all landed on the same page here. There's about to be some fight. You know, I can appreciate, you know, Rambo over Arnold, but I cannot justify Jason Bourne over James Bond. That's just blasphemy.
Now, this is not my question, but I feel like it's
I'm
obligated to ask.
We don't have time for that.
Just real quick, you don't have to explain it. Which Bond?
I don't have time for that.
Let's go back.
You're going to say Sean Connery. I know it.
We're going to leave that to a different cast because we don't have...
Yeah, that's a deep dive.
Okay.
These movies are in my blood. I can't tell you one right now. I can't.
That's fair. All right, we'll do one more round of star supporting extra. These three actors, I feel, are pretty overrated, but
we come in.
I'll let you guys sort it out. These three: Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss, and Roy Schneider.
He's really.
I have Scheider in this note.
You did. Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss, Roy Schneider.
I mean, they should all be extras, but.
You can't extra you one of those boys. You can't do that.
I mean, you got to go with how it is in the poster.
But none of them are extras. How do you extra one of those guys?
Isn't there one that's more of an extra?
I don't know in what regard you mean that by, but...
that's why I'm letting Steven go first.
That's why I'm just sitting back and going to let them fight.
Well, we went around and about our favorites and stuff like that before on the other cast, but the thing that's tough is that they work well for like...
Oh, they work in tandem. Like
I that. Could watch a whole movie where Quint and Hooper riff off one another the entire time, but... I don't know how to do this.
I'll ease it for
and
you.
And I'm not going to say it's Jaws. This can't be just Jaws, though. This would have to be...
No, you're making a completely separate movie with these guys.
Oh, yeah.
What do you do?
Let's say it's a Western.
Oh, all right. Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss. Nope. Robert Shaw, is Roy Scheider. Star? Oh, yeah. Shaw is going to be the star. Roy Scheider, Richard Dreyfuss. Especially if it's a Western.
Yeah, I'm out.
When you said Western, I was like, okay.
Mr. Hooper.
I think that you dismissed the comedic levity, though, that would need to... That's just too much
I'm
to pass up
on.
I'm
making a funny Western.
You got to have some sort of... It's a bone tomahawk.
Yeah. I'm making bone tomahawk.
Okay, I guess that's all fair. I think I would probably... I hate doing this. I might cast it down with Shaw's the lead, Dreyfuss as the supporting, and Scheider as the extra, only because I live for their banter.
Getting rid of the chief?
How do you get rid of... You getting rid of the marine biologist?
Is there a scenario where you would star Dreyfuss?
Yeah, I guess in the right movie for sure, but I don't... With those three guys, it's hard. I mean, it depends on... You definitely could find the right movie for that, where Shaw wouldn't be the top... Bill, I mean,
like an origin story for Hooper.
If you're making a teen comedy, you're not gonna have Robert Shaw in the lead for sure. But I mean,
Robert overall, Shaw, Van Wilder,
yeah. Like, I'm just looking at acting prowess. Like,
yeah, I know.
Obviously, yeah. Dreyfuss is a great actor, but he's not Shakespearean Shaw over here. Like, it's not gonna happen.
No, but like when we were talking about the comedy too, like as far as acting chops between those three guys, I mean, it really comes down to the comedy that you're making.
Robert Shaw was a hell of a Bond villain.
Yeah, that's all. That's true. That question is the hardest one for me for the night, just because I have. Yeah, it's hard to picture that trio outside of Jaws, though. That's where it's tough for me, because I try to picture a different story where, you know, because really, I mean, you got Quint coming in latest of all three, really, when he really gets his chops moving and then and going, like, and he still, I mean, it's...
All right, put him in Jurassic Park.
Well, Robert Shaw is going to be Attenborough. Roy Scheider is going to be Sam Neill. And Dreyfuss is going to be the guy who gets his...
Are you kidding me? Oh my God!
Hooper is not in the movie, Chief.
This
is better than I've anticipated.
Yeah, we can't. What would your lineup be, man? Because I don't know if this if I can.
I haven't seen much of him in anything other than Jaws, but Robert Shaw was awesome in that movie, and I think if you're gonna do any kind of a drama. Anything that wasn't like a comedy, he would probably be the lead in it. I didn't really care much for Scheider, so he would probably be my extra.
To his point, it's not that I don't love Richard Dreyfuss, but...
You just said he got eaten by the T-Rex!
He got eaten by the T-Rex because he's an extra. But to my point, a handful of episodes ago, I was talking about how Roy Scheider, to me, is one of those actors that's just immensely underrated.
Oh, he definitely...
Like, from Marathon Man to Sorcerer and stuff like mm-hmm. that. I just feel like he's got that, the face and the kind of, like, the held-back talent. Like, any time it can come out. Whereas Dreyfuss is one of these guys, like, I like a handful of his movies, but, like... I guess the biggest, apart from Close Encounters, the big Richard Dreyfuss movie everybody talks about is What About Bob? And, okay, that's a Bill Murray movie, not a Richard Dreyfuss movie.
Sure, sure, sure. But those three together, I think that was where it is. I would agree with you on that. I don't think he has the strongest filmography of the three, but I'm just picturing another movie where those two guys just rip on each other an hour and a half, 2 hours.
I would pay to see that movie, for sure.
They probably would have the most camaraderie. Out of
Or even almost like the opposite of that, like where they would have to like work at it. And I think that would make for a great dynamic. It did in Jaws. I guess
camaraderie wasn't what I was looking for, but yeah, you would get the most punch out of
Okay.
So you got one more question.
I got the number 10 question, and I'll just throw this out there kind of to wrap it up and see what you guys think. It's a doubleheader, a little two-parter here. So far, you know, we got 10 episodes under our belt. Personally, what's your favorite part of doing a podcast, a film podcast so far after 10 episodes? What's been your favorite part of the experience?
That's a loaded question.
And then we've had a bunch that's come off mic. One question directed right at the listeners that they can answer directly. And doesn't have to be their favorite movie, this, that, or the other. But what's something you want to hear from everybody listening after 10 episodes?
Yeah, I know. That's kind of a...
I know, but it's...
kind of a shit question, isn't it?
Yeah, 10 episodes? I mean, I think it's a good one. I mean, I can...
I mean, honestly, the first part's easy. Hanging out with you two cool cats and just talking movies is fun. The fact that we're worldwide famous now is only a second. Like, that's secondary. The amount of money that we are making is just ridiculous.
It's stupid.
I mean, we don't have to do this. We're doing it because you guys love it. Rick, you gotta answer the first part.
I mean, obviously, I gotta echo Scott here. This would have been much easier a decade ago, before life got busy and hectic. But the fact that we can set a time out every week to join together, have a couple brews, and talk some film, and you know, a couple dozen of you guys listen to it every week and enjoy it and give us more to talk about. But yeah, I mean, it's getting together with you two fellas every week. That's the best part.
It's good. I think my favorite part has been just being right every week. You know, that's been... No, 100%, you're right.
He's a blindsided. What? What is he on tonight?
He's only right every week because he edits the episodes.
Oh,
this is true.
These guys,
we're not even
going
to be in this episode. Yeah. It's just going to be Steve.
Steven, take it back to Steven.
Like I said, 10 questions. No, that is, you know, first and foremost, getting together. I just wanted to kind of reflect on it a little, just for a minute, because 10 episodes, that's over 2 months, and that, like, so we went quick, but I guess just, like, kind of you touched on it, hearing from people, and really, we've said it on multiple episodes, but hearing the folks saying, I'm listening to this, or I'm watching this movie because you said this, that never gets old. It never loses its punch. That's so cool. I mean, that's kind of when we first set out to do it. It's like we did this before. We just didn't have a microphone.
Right.
So, you know, now we're able to hear people bounce back and say, yeah, I love this, or I love that, or I hate this, or I hate that. And that really is kind of what we were going for.
That answers the second part of my question.
Right, right.
Is I'd like to have like a bigger forum for people to tell us what they've got from us. Like, I know I mentioned a while back, like, the biggest triumph of this podcast was I got somebody to watch Cruel Jaws.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of guys at work who have lists of just movies. And they're like, at this point, you guys have named so many movies, we stopped until we can catch up, which is good too.
Right.
But I want to hear like a forum style, like, we loved this, and why would you guys ever tell us to watch this? You know, like, that's kind of what I got from Cruel Jaws. Like, I'm happy I watched it, but it's definitely an experience. But I'd like to just honestly hear more feedback, not in any, like, straightforward fact. Just tell us what you liked.
Right.
And, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
I hate to give an easy answer and piggyback off of Scott, but, I mean, I would love that if we could set up, hey, I watched XXX, I like this, I didn't like this. More feedback would be desirable so we can keep this ball rolling. But to your point, you know, the fact that people go home and check these movies out, it's almost like you experiencing the film again through them. Because you get their excitement and their this and that.
Or not excitement.
This is true.
Yeah.
Right. But, I personally just want to say thank you to all you guys that are listening, because you guys are taking time out of your days, out of your weeks to listen to us talk. And that's kind of cool.
Absolutely.
And it, it, I never, it never gets old as far as appreciating it. So thank you so much, guys, for 10. And we're going to keep rolling.
I mean, when I walk down the street and I hear Dirtbag Cinema, I mean, that really just warms my heart. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Well, I can't help but echo this. I do have like one question. This is episode 10, and we've talked about this, and there will be more on this. But I guess my question would be, do you guys like t-shirts?
I mean, I'm wearing one right now.
Because we've talked about it for a while now, and we've really wanted to kind of maybe start getting some stuff out there with the logo on it. And we said 10 episodes might be a good time to maybe crack this open, and we'll be posting a ton on social media about this, maybe some giveaways, maybe some definitely the link to where you guys can go find one. There's been a couple of the prototypes, if you will, floating around, and some people have said, hey, I want one. So we're going to make it available. You'll see it there probably, I'll say sometime in the next few weeks, but that'd be cool. I thought it'd be cool to maybe announce it.
Build the Dirtbag Army. On the
podcast. Yeah,
ask and you shall receive.
Now, Steven personally owns one. We got a couple coming. They're very nice. They're very premium.
Oh, yeah. That
nice soft, soft t-shirt.
What is it? Goat? What is this? Cashmere? This is very, very good stuff.
Pleather. Pleather shirts.
Top notch. But yeah, hopefully those go off well. You guys like them. We're going to drop it soon. And other than that, I guess that's our 10 questions.
I'll give one more heartfelt. I'm really surprised we made it 10. I figured at some point that I would be canceled. But, you know, I figured you guys would be going on without me. But it has been so fun hanging back and shooting the shit with you guys. Even when we don't agree, this is still, you know, a highlight in my week.
100%.
Here's to 10 more.
Here's to 10 more. So I guess real quick, we'll, as always, social media outlets. We got Facebook, Twitter, got Instagram, got email account, got thedirtbagcinema@gmail.com. So definitely that's the best place to reach us right now. And maybe we can work on getting something a little more formal for communication. I mean, right now, if you guys want to shout out on the Facebook page, on the group, that's really the best place to have the conversation at, because everybody can kind of weigh in their two cents. So let us know on any of our recommendations, anything you guys want to see, have seen. But other than that, you guys got anything else?
I think we're good.
I think we're good.
Until the next 10, we'll see you at the cinema, Dirtbags.